Good evening and welcome to the Tuesday, March 20th meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. Commissioner Luhr, our chairperson, is not available tonight, so I'll be filling in for him as vice chair. So we have a quorum, and I'll call the meeting to order. Let's start with a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Would you please rise and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
So our first item on the agenda is Planning Commissioner announcements. So I'll look to my left, your right, to Commissioner Ingraffia. Yeah.
Jesse. Yeah, I'd just like to make an announcement that we're having, there's an Easter at a Rock celebration, and we're going to be there setting up from about 5 o'clock in the morning on till about noon, and if you're just around, even walking around, come by for some hot coffee and some muffins or bagel. And also, there's a Wharf Tech meeting coming up, I believe, on the 2nd. And check your calendar, check the site on the website. Thank
you. And the other thing I'll note is that we have a meeting Thursday, the 22nd. Scott, do you want to say anything about that?
Sure. We do have a Vault View, so you should be aware of it. It's a joint Planning Commission and Harbor Advisory Board meeting to discuss definitions, working waterfront, and Measure D, and incorporate those concepts into the general plan and LCP update and zoning code update. So we put together a staff report for you. I think Gina might have emailed you about the availability of that, so you can come by and pick it up if you want. It's also online. And so it'll be on Thursday, the 22nd, at the Community Center in the multipurpose room at 6 o'clock.
And is that a formal hearing, or is that just an advisory discussion?
It's a meeting of both boards, so it's a special meeting of both boards. So it's a public meeting. We'll be getting direction to funnel into the general plan and LCP update, and then you as the Planning Commission will be seeing the results of that as those changes come forward, as they come forward in the general plan and zoning code update.
So this is primarily a meeting for citizens to become aware and submit, to become aware of where the discussion is on the use positions.
It's to do that, and then we've put some draft language together out of the subcommittees. I met a couple of different times, and then I've brought it, I think, to the full Planning Commission a couple of different times,
right,
too, to get your input. And so Eric Endersby, the Harbor Director, and myself kind of put that together and where we might, into options or opportunities for where we might plug that into the update process. And then we're going to have both boards weigh in, and if we can get a clear direction out of that, then we'll move it forward and turn it over to the consultants and have it rolled into the update process.
So nothing's final. It's something that people will have a formal hearing process to review again.
It'll go. So once it gets done with the two boards, then we'll take that direction or whatever the language comes out of that. We'll put that, finalize it, and then roll it into the draft documents that the GPAC will review and the Planning Commission review and the City Council will review. So it's far from done. It's just where in the process we are, and plenty of opportunity for folks to weigh in as we wind our way through the final adoption process for the various documents.
Okay, great, thanks. So this is the time in the meeting where we have an open public comment period. If you aren't commenting on item B1, if you have something to make an announcement or comment on, please come forward.
Good afternoon or evening, Bill Martini, Morro Bay. And I wasn't at the last meeting when you were discussing the working waterfront, and I did listen to it on TV, and I just wanted to make some comments. I do know that you have a meeting in 2 days. I plan to be there. But I just thought I'd, from a perspective, my wife and I own the cannery down there. I personally own the lighthouse, Gladys Walton's property. And so if you're not familiar with that area, I just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of the history, describe what's down there. And also, I don't know if you're aware of mixed-use planning area B. There's actually on the books describing that area, what is allowed, what has been down there, the grandfathered uses. So I'm not sure if you're going to be leaving that alone. This is south of the boat launch I'm talking about. It's approximately a 20-lot subdivision, subdivided in the mid-20s, and it goes from Main Street down to the waterfront. And about 90% of that property is zoned residential. Approximately 10% along the waterfront is zoned waterfront commercial with an overlay on it, a PD overlay, and also an overlay for certain uses in that area, mainly describing had to be water-oriented. So there's already zoning in place on it. Also, when I heard Mr. Lohr talk, Michael Lucas talk about the elitists down there, the area back in the 50s was zoned R2. There's currently 10 residences on the waterfront. There's one commercial at this point, it's a boat haul out. So as far as pushing this into commercial outside of our particular property, it's pretty much a done deal. And our property, I measured the commercial because it's below the bluff. It's 35 feet from the edge of the water to the bluff, toe of the bluff. One spot, it's 40. So there's virtually, depending on setbacks, there really is no commercial hardly to deal with in that area. And the intent with the offshore was that all the commercial, the fishing boats and that were to be at the north end of Morro Bay. The midsection was for your shops and all that. The south end is designated for recreational boating and fishing. And this is in your LCP. It's also in the mixed-use plan that it calls for in the special planning area B. It describes mixed harbor and what's allowed in that area. South of there in that area is Esha. And one statement, I don't know if I'm, I was just going to mention that south of the actual fuel dock, known as the Bayside Marina, is actually not commercial. The commercial zoning stops at the Bayside Marina. So it doesn't go south. The inn is commercial, but that whole strip is actually a city park. It's Bayshore Bluff. So there is no commercial south of there. Also, your fuel dock is actually on a water lease site. 90% of the property where you have the commercial, it's been converted to residences. Those are actually on a water lease site. And then I just wanted to really mention real quick on Measure D, your power intake, that actually is not in Measure D. If you read Measure D, it's restricted to state lands, the lease sites. That's private property along next to GAFCO. Measure D goes out to Target Rock, but those two properties are excluded as far as industrial, you know, talking about your windmills and that. And support. So that area is not in your Measure D restricted area. And I have a lot more, but I'll save most of it for Thursday. But I just wanted to give you a brief history on that. But one last thing is the actual cannery building, 90% of that is in a residential zoning. The grocery store is in a residential zoning. The neighborhood compatibility was put into place because back in the 80s, that area had switched over to more of a residential than a commercial. So all the commercial was grandfathered in the residential zoning, but no longer is. Originally, that was zoned R2. It was rezoned industrial in the 50s, 60s. It was downzoned to residential with a very thin slip of commercial in the early 80s because of the residential in that area. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Martini. Anyone else? Okay, we'll close public comment. I won't close my microphone, though. The consent calendar, current and advanced planning processing list. Do we have any questions or comments on that?
Straightforward.
Seeing none, do I hear a move to approve?
I'll move that we approve the consent calendar.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion passes. So we'll move on to public hearing. Case B1, 220 North Main Street. And Joan, you're going to walk us through this one.
Will do. Thank you, Vice Chairman Lucas, and good evening, Commissioners. So the project before you this evening is a request for conditional use permit and parking exception approval at 220 Main Street. The applicant, Maya Kinzinger, proposes an addition of 10% to an existing nonconforming residential structure that's occupied by a nonconforming duplex use. The duplex residential use is located within the R1 single-family residential zoning district and inside of the Coastal Commission appeal jurisdiction. As you can see, slightly shaded there in the red, pink, I guess. The parcel at 220 Main Street is in the central Morro Bay neighborhood to the south of Cerrito Peak, north of Bayshore Drive, and east of Shasta Avenue. Staff looked at whether the addition could be permitted as a single-family residence, an SFR, with an associated accessory dwelling unit. However, the ADU must be less than 50% of the habitable floor area of the SFR, and because the downstairs unit is larger than 50% of the habitable square footage of the upper unit, it can't be considered an ADU and is therefore considered duplex residential, which is inconsistent with the general plan and the zoning ordinance. However, Section 17.56 of the Municipal Code allows for a one-time only expansion of 10% to a nonconforming use. Structure is considered nonconforming with regard to parking. The existing parking on site consists of two covered and enclosed parking spaces with a dividing wall, which creates basically two adjacent one-car garages. One space is 10 feet wide, and one space is 8 feet 6 inches wide, where 11 feet is the minimum interior width for a one-car garage. The parking exception allows for the decreased width of the covered and enclosed spaces. And then also, with only two covered and enclosed parking spaces, the residential development lacks the four required parking spaces for two dwelling units. So the parking exception is also to allow for the two remaining parking spaces to be located uncovered and in tandem in the existing driveway, which is located at the rear of the structure. You'll see that here, hopefully. Oh, in the next one. So this is the existing site as it's seen from the corner of Main Street and Oak. The total square footage of the existing structure is 1,982 square feet. The applicant proposes to add 10%, or 198 square feet, to the existing 505 square foot ground floor residential unit, making it a total of 703. And the upstairs residential unit will remain unchanged at 991. This is the site plan showing the two proposed uncovered and unenclosed parking spaces in the existing gravel driveway on the side. One of the conditions of approval will be to pave that area. Let's see. Proposed first floor plan shows the non-conforming dimensions of the existing garage and the reconfigured floor plan of the enlarged downstairs unit. As I said before, the second floor shall remain unchanged. So I apologize for the quality of these images. I tried to sharpen and clarify them as much as possible. But these are the front and rear elevations of the structure. The rear elevation shall remain unchanged, and the front elevation in the image to the right illustrates the proposed addition and the improved articulation on the western-facing facade. Now, while the elevations show horizontal siding, the photo simulations will show the proposed colors and a stucco exterior. However, speaking to the architect, I will allow him to expand. I believe the applicants would like to keep the horizontal siding. You guys can discuss that. Staff had approved it as a stucco exterior consistent with the residential design guidelines where the colors and materials of the existing structure match the proposed addition. These are the proposed side elevations. These are those photo simulations that illustrate the proposed colors and materials and a vast improvement to the residential design guidelines and its neighborhood consistency. Therefore, staff recommends that the Planning Commission approve the requested conditional use permit and parking exception for the project at 220 Main through the adoption of resolution number 0818 that's subject to the associated findings and conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan. The first part of our public hearing, we'd like to have give the floor to the applicant or consultant. Would you like to come forward and speak to the project, please?
Thank you. Good evening. Hi, I'm Mike Smith. I'm the architect on the project. Okay. I do apologize for the poor quality of the renderings. They were supposed to show the lap siding on the front because the owner, who is also a graphic designer, was very interested in, if you remember the existing shots, it was more of a box. And in fact, I guess the nickname has been called it the Blue Cube. And she really wanted to go away from that by accentuating the horizontal lines. That's why we've extended the roof, the flat roof. We've got a band at the middle. And she wanted the deck area and everything for the addition to accentuate that horizontal quality of the building, picking up what, you know, we're replacing the garage doors, and they're sectional, so they have a horizontal quality to them. So we're doing everything we can to accentuate that horizontal band and such. And we did see horizontal siding in the area, so we figured, I missed that in the report, but we thought that would blend in more, and the contrast would really add a vast improvement over what is there now.
So is that the end of your presentation? Okay.
Well, because it seemed like that was the question of the moment. If there is something I can address, be happy to.
What we'll do is we'll keep the public comment period open, and we'll probably pull you back when we have questions. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So you can sit down.
Okay.
All right. This is like learning a dance step. So we'll open public comment again.
Great.
Good evening, Bill Martini again. Yes, I own Ladd's Castle right across the street from this, and my first question is front setbacks. I like the design a lot, but when I looked at the thing today, it looked like it was about 5 or 10 feet off the street, if I was imagining it. And I know our setbacks are 25 foot off Main Street, so I had a question of if this is encroaching into the front setbacks or if there's been an exception for that. My second issue is this is, and I like I say, we've never had an issue with this property in the past. The biggest issue in this neighborhood is parking. And I'm going to explain to you a little bit. When Gladys Walton, who had the property, she built with the windmill house across the street from this. She built the boathouse, the lighthouse, and the stone house. She was a silent movie star from the 20s, died in 1992. She was required to have 5 parking spaces for 225 Main Street, which we have 3 legal residences there. We spent probably 5 years and a ton of money on attorneys fighting the person. There's a recorded city covenant with exclusive rights to 5 parking spaces for 225 Main Street. The city has fought us, and the owner of the property has fought us, even though it's been a recorded covenant, saying, number one, we didn't have right to that parking, which it's a recorded document. Secondly, they said, oh, it belongs half to the boat slips and half to you, and it's first come, first served. So the bottom line is across the street, there's a demand for 10 parking spaces where there's only 5 available. The owner of 206 Main Street took those five parking spaces and built a deck in the parking lot. And they downsized the existing parking lot, and she parks in there, which she's not supposed to, taking one of the spaces, and the angle of one of the parking spaces makes the other one non-usable because her deck blocked her from coming in straight. The reason I'm bringing this up is because of a parking exception across the street here. The other thing is the fuel dock, the old fuel dock, the Bayside Marina, has probably a demand for 30, well, it's about one parking space per boat slip. They have over 30 slips there. They have three residences down below. They only have 13 parking spaces. And it goes on and on. So I'm just saying that parking is a big issue. There's a lot of street parking, and I don't think this is going to increase the capacity, but if it's turning into a vacation rental where we have more parking, then it could be an issue. Next door to us, Norm Arnold did a development where he squeezed three small homes on three, like, 25-foot lots. They weren't supposed to park in the driveway. There was a no-fly zone. Now it's vacation rentals are parking in the driveways and on the street. So I just wanted to bring this to attention on this may exasperate a parking situation there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Betty.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz. We have a neighborhood book club, and we were talking about this today. And basically, we're real supportive of this property because they're rehabbing an old property. They're not trying to expand or make it huge, and we really appreciate trying to stay in the context of the neighborhood. We have a similar concern that Mr. Martoni was expressing about parking. I don't think that's an issue as much for this particular property, though they're asking for the tandem when we all have concerns about tandems, and that's why it's here, because we don't do tandems, but I'm guessing in the new zoning ordinance, you're going to be doing tandems. So they don't have to keep coming back to you. But if that's going to be the case, then my comment is really towards the city, is that we need to start enforcing where properties are encroaching into our parking areas along our streets. And that's happening in my neighborhood. I pointed that out to Mr. Graham when we had a little tour there. I was walking up on Ridgeway the other day, and there's a property where someone has literally dumped shards of rocks in the right-of-way where there used to be parking at, I'll even say, 990 Ridgeway, if you want to go look at it. There's other places that have done that. They put rocks out so you can't park where you normally could. So it seems to me that enforcement is going to become a real key factor in making sure that tandem parking doesn't become an issue more so in our neighborhoods. And so if you can't address that in some way, and maybe you can in the zoning, or if that needs to go through enforcement, but we want you to know that we're supportive of this project but concerned about parking.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, with that, I'll close public comment and bring it back here. Joan, can you address the setback question?
Yes, they have provided a survey identifying the property boundaries, and they are within their rights. You are allowed to encroach up to 5 feet into the setback. They are, with the second-story deck, they are allowed to encroach, and so that overhang is well within that five-foot boundary. If you can see that triangle dotted line there, you can see the edge. You can see the setback line. That diagonally hashed area is actually a concrete walkway on the ground at ground level. So only that tiny amount is actually encroaching where they are allowed up to 5 feet. So they are well within their setback requirements.
If I'm not mistaken, there's a sizable right-of-way in Main Street on the east side at that point, too. So there is a... I'm remembering, you know, so
you're
the property
correct.
Line's probably halfway between the house and the
correct
the Main Street mm-hmm. paving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's bring it back up here. I'll look to Commissioner Ingraffi. Do you have any comments?
Well, I have a couple of questions, I guess, first of Joan. I'm assuming the applicant wasn't the builder of the...
Correct, yes.
Right. And I'm guessing that this property wouldn't have come before us if they hadn't sought to enlarge the property. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then there was one other. I noticed that a fair amount of demolition, or perhaps all the demolition, has already occurred.
Yes, they had, I believe they had started work, and then they applied for a building permit, at which time we looked at the non-conforming status of the use and the structure with parking and the duplex use and the residential. So we stopped work them, and then they started through the planning process. So it's been kind of sitting open for some time.
Okay, because I was originally looking at it, and I was wondering if the fact that the demolition had already begun meant that they were prepared to remodel the property even if this exception wasn't granted, but I guess that's not the case. They simply didn't know that they needed a special permit.
I believe that's right.
You know. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go any further, does anyone have any ex parte communications?
Okay.
No.
Okay. Okay, none.
You can clarify with the architect, but I believe that at first it was just going to be a remodel, and so they took off that wall they weren't planning on enlarging, and then the applicant was all, well, since we've gone down this road, I think there wasn't a stop work order issued. I think it was they stopped and then just applied for a building permit for a small addition, not realizing that they were limited to that 10%, and it's the first-time addition, so there was some confusion about the permitting requirements, and so they've come to the city and gone through all of the proper channels.
Okay, thanks. Jesse, you have anything?
No questions. Did you, were we at comments yet? Or?
Well, just questions, I guess.
Okay, no questions.
Do you have questions?
Yeah, I just my question was what Joe was asking about the demo, so you answered it. Thank you.
Okay, well, then I'll ask for comments. Do you want to start again, Joe?
I've devoted more than my usual amount of thought to this one because it was seemingly a simple issue for me, but it's become more complicated. Certainly, you know, the plans as proposed increase the attractiveness of the structure. There's no doubt about that. And I'm left with the thought that if we were to grant this exception, there really wouldn't be a significant change in the parking arrangement. They would be essentially tandem parking on the side of the property, and there's these two small garages.
Regardless of whether or not they were increasing the size of the lower unit, they are still lacking in their parking. So regardless of whether or not they were going to add, they would need to provide the parking, and so they're just kind of memorializing the existing parking situation on site.
Right, right. On the other side, let's see if I can be comprehensive about this. You know, not knowing the history of the place, it strikes me that the fact that there's a duplex there is a little bit at odds with the nature of the neighborhood, it being predominantly single residence. But what I wanted to give weight to was that, you know, we have repeatedly on this board said that we acknowledge that tandem parking is typically not observed, and that we're really concerned that the burden of additional cars not be placed on neighbors. And we already have garages that are particularly small, so I'm not even certain whether they're used on a regular basis. So there may be a considerable burden on the neighborhood. And I'm thinking that, you know, enlarging that one apartment only increases the odds that four automobiles might be associated with the two tenants there, burdening the parking resources of the neighborhood. You know, again, we've also talked about the need for affordable housing in Morro Bay. And, you know, in one sense, I'm sort of reluctant to bring up this issue and burden an applicant, a single applicant, on it when it really hasn't been addressed in a comprehensive fashion for the city. But there's no denying the fact that this upgrade will, you know, undoubtedly make that particular apartment a little more expensive and will do its part to somehow make housing, particularly rental housing, a little less expensive, a little less affordable. And usually when I look at these things, I really ask myself, well, are we in any way, if we were to not grant this exception, are we depriving, you know, the homeowner, the applicant, of the enjoyment of his property? And in this case, we're not saying that the property can't be remodeled and updated. We're simply saying that it can't be enlarged. We might be saying that. And, you know, frankly, you know, there seldom is an applicant who comes before us at a meeting that isn't in one way or another trying to enlarge his property, and we sometimes say yes and we sometimes say no, but it's certainly a norm to sometimes say no, you can't make your property larger. So you try to balance these respective interests of the community and the homeowner, and, you know, sometimes I'll say to myself, well, if we were to grant this exception, and then a neighbor came to us sometime later and said, well, because of the parking situation, I find someone parking in front of my property, why did you allow that to happen? And, you know, in response to that, I might not have a good answer. Again, because it doesn't seem like inherent property rights are being deprived, and we're not saying that the property can't be improved. We're simply saying that this might not be a good situation in which to enlarge it. Those are my thoughts. I'm far from certain of my position, but those were the thoughts I was entertaining.
Okay, Jesse?
I'm with Joe on this. I thought that when I first looked at this, I thought it was just a very simple thing, 10% enlargement, and I still do. I think that by and large, we're not making the parking situation worse. I think that if they didn't increase this by 10%, they'd still have the same number of cars. That's the way I see it. This is just as good a spot as any. I've been meaning to say this for haven't had the right opportunity, so I'm going to say it now. And I don't know that this is the case, so I'm not applying this to this case. However, if there was a stop work order placed on a property for lack of permits or whatever, I would be far less agreeable to grant any sort of conditional use permits after the fact. So, I mean, in the sense, and I guess I say that as a broader statement to say, I hope that the contractor community and the construction community at large, by and large, gets permits and applies for permits with Scott's department, our department, prior to starting work. And I'm not saying that happened here because I don't know. I just thought I thought, okay, Joan's telling me it did not happen. So I'm just kind of picking my spot here to say that if that is the case, I'll be far less agreeable. But in this case, I think that it doesn't make a situation worse. I think the same amount of cars will be on that property whether we approve the 10% or not. And that's how I feel.
I'd just like to add this comment. I intended to say it earlier, but I forgot about it. In previous meetings, when we were thinking of some sort of uniform approach to this issue, which comes up so frequently, I can recall saying that because tandem parking is typically not observed, even though it's allowed, that it might be reasonable to say, well, we would allow this kind of a parking exception when the property within its borders also allows one car to be parked in a non-tandem fashion, okay? Or at the very least, it's not quite as acceptable, but at the least, there is adequate parkway parking to accommodate that car so the car isn't inevitably parked in front of someone else's neighbors. And in this situation, I don't think as it currently exists, there's a parkway that borders the property that would accommodate a car should tandem parking not be observed.
The picture of the... I think maybe you just don't have a direct line of. So this rendering sort of gets you there. I mean, there's the, and I think Commissioner Lucas referred to it, there's a fairly large portion of unimproved right-of-way in front of the house. So you have you have the ability to park both cars in the driveway, in the garage, and then in the area where they're proposing to put them in the setback. So there's actually quite a bit of capacity on this property for the parking cars. Oftentimes we'll have the addition to a house that has no garage, and we're looking into doing solutions. So this one I don't think has quite the impact of maybe some of the others that we've seen. I would also note that, and this might be just a different way to look at it. When we were going through the process, we were trying to determine what this was, and so we did a lot of research into it to find out, hey, was this a permitted duplex? I mean, and then we found out that it was on the county records as a duplex. So we're like, okay, so now we have a duplex. And then we looked at it and said, well, this becomes an easier issue if it's an accessory dwelling unit, because if it's within a half mile of a transit stop, they don't need parking. And then we said, oh, well, it doesn't meet the 50% limitation there, so we can't do that. The applicant could have tried to come back in that way and added square footage to the top so that the unit below met the requirements and then wouldn't require the parking that we're talking about right now. But they just proposed the modest addition that they have there, and that addition does not include the addition of any bedrooms. It remains a one-bedroom unit on the bottom. I think it just added some square footage to the living and kitchen area, really, and bathroom maybe. So anyway, that was just an observation and to walk you through the process that staff went through when we looked at this, because it was kind of convoluted to get. So we got to the point where we're like, oh, it's not an ADU, and then we're like, well, can this happen? And then we're like, okay, well, there's a nonconforming use expansion, 10%. That's as much as we have available to you if you go down that road, and that's the road they chose. So.
Okay, thank you. Richard, do you have some comments?
I'm kind of bouncing off what you're saying here, Scott. Am I to understand correctly, like if they were, let's say, to expand the top unit, right, and leave the bottom unit alone, then there's a potential that you could have laced in the ADU parameters. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we have the one limitation in the ADU section that says your ADU can't be larger than 50% of the square footage of the main unit. So if they were to add on to the top, the bottom, depending on how much they added on, yeah, could have been considered an ADU, and they could have added on to that too, right? They could have pushed the whole thing out forward,
okay,
and
okay,
maybe, you know, got somewhere along, you know, the lines of meeting that 50% threshold.
Okay.
Point being is this is a fairly modest addition with a property that actually has better parking situations than you oftentimes see.
Yeah.
But again, it was one that staff struggled with to you know, do we have policies that allow it to happen or not? And so sort of painting the picture, I guess, for you.
Yeah. I like both Jesse's and Joe's comment. And when I rode by that job, you know, I saw it all demoed, and I'm thinking, what's going on here, you know? But you guys explain it properly. Otherwise, it's like, you know, we may not feel wanted, you know? I do like the project, and I do see the validity of the articulation and stuff. Regarding the parking challenges, I'm always... The concern that I see is that we do not want to set like a precedent that we're going to be, that this is like, you know, going to be a rubber stamp thing. So as long as there's a process where when these kind of issues in the parking come in, and then they could be reviewed by a planning commission and go through the process, and not a predetermined assumption that, you know, the thing. Because some of the challenges, some of the thing like Joe said with the way he described having a car where with a parking situation, I kind of like that. It makes sense. Other than that, I'd like to hear some more dialogue on it.
I think when I first looked at it and I saw, okay, we're solving the parking problems with exterior tandem parking, and one of them's in the front right away, front setback, I thought, no way. I thought, I don't want this to be happening. This is not the way to solve things. But the reason things come before us is because specific situations. And I think this is a problematic property in town. It's an undersized parcel in a fantastic. I love the area that, you know, some of our speakers live in. I think it's one of the greatest spatial things. Very tight spaces. Extremely interesting setbacks. It's the atypical. It's the complete opposite of most of our subdivisions that are planned. Cookie cutter kind of thing. So when I look at this, I think it's solving a lot of problems. It's solving a problem parcel. It's actually giving us two units inside 1,600 square feet plus or minus of housing, which we just don't see in town very often. It's usually 6,000 square feet to get two dwelling units. So I love the micro scale of it. I actually like a lot of the ideas. I don't want to get hung up on aesthetics. I like a lot of the ideas that are being put forward in terms of the way it goes. But when I actually look at the parking resolution, we have the two garages. We actually have the tandem working against an uphill section that the uphill neighbor, I believe, has a fence and isn't even going to see these cars out their windows. So I think that adds to this particular piece working. And then I think if you look at that bottom image, it may not be impossible to fit four cars in that driveway if they have company or something like that. So, you know, you can't park in front of the house on Main. I don't think there's enough side street frontage to park relative to where the corner is. So this house has to pull all of its weight in that parking area. And I do remember, I don't remember exactly which of these paper streets and rights of way we looked at previously, but this is before both of you are here. We did look at housing that used those rights of ways for parking. And I remember specifically the Windmill property and other ones having discussion about the nature of the way the parking was resolved on that. So this is a, you know, goes way back in terms of being a parking problem area. But I think this one's, I agree with my colleagues, I don't think this one's going to add to it. So I like the way that we're adding life to the building toward Main Street. The only aesthetic thing that is a least concern of mine is the proportion of the two front windows. The one to the left is over a sink in the kitchen. The one to the right is basically the window until you get to the door by the stairs for the living space. And I wish it was a little larger. The existing window proportion is larger than this one. It has about another foot and a half of height, I think, than this one does. So that's just a recommendation, I think, on my part. I'd like to see a little bit more presence or a little bit higher landscape in the front so that you don't notice that giant skirt of siding. I think I've like to hear from my colleagues before I make a statement about the siding. Did anybody have a comment about the siding issue relative to the stucco?
I like the idea. When the architect described the horizontal and how it ties in with the doors, that the garage doors that are going to be slightly rolled up, I generally, as a rule of thumb, like it better than stucco overall. But I think it articulates nicely.
Yeah, I certainly like the exterior design of it. I don't have any quarrel with that. Again, just for a point of clarification, though, but this property, as currently laid out, and with respect to the plan, can't accommodate four cars other than using tandem parking. Am I getting this wrong? As it is possible now to put a car on the parkway in front of the house?
There is a large, and it's kind of expressed in that center picture there. There's a fairly like 10 to 12 feet of unimproved right-of-way that sits out there, and their driveway runs through that. And so when you look at the site plan, you see, there's probably 12 feet between the property line and the face of the garage. Well, it's not really left to park a car in, but there's another 10-plus feet of unimproved right-of-way that's sitting out there that you can park on. And so if they park in their driveway there, you could park cars in their driveway, cars in the garage, and then cars in the side setback, which I think what Commissioner Lucas was referring to. So when you look at the site plan, you look at just what the outline of the lot is, and you don't see that space. But when the actual physical expression on the ground is that the driveway, you can park in it without being in hanging out in the street, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, that really wasn't my question, though, because if you park in the driveway, you block the use of the garage, correct? And what I'm saying is there is no way to park on the property such that you don't you're not an obstacle to the garages.
Existing conditions on the site without this proposed addition, they would not have any other parking options. The slope on the two sides on Oak and getting up into that front yard kind of triangle piece, it would be really difficult given the slope. So the only, even if they weren't proposing to do any addition, the only place you could park four cars is two in the driveway and two in tandem, and then guests in the driveway.
It would require, because of the slope there, extending a retaining wall along the edge there to flatten the area out adjacent to where you enter into the lower unit. So you would have to pull in the driveway and then pull adjacent to the alongside of the house. That would be the only location where you could possibly put one, but it would require a retaining wall out there to do it, which I don't know would necessarily be a great idea, aesthetically anyway.
Okay, so if we've and on the siding, I actually I can't remember if you were the one who brought forward another aesthetic issue that you were wanting to change, and we went with the owner.
I was just pointing out consistency with the design guidelines when it talks about consistency in colors and materials, but and left it to him to bring up kind of that argument as to why he chose the horizontal siding and let you guys make that decision.
Yeah, I tend to agree with my colleagues. I'll pick the siding over stucco any day, especially in this use on Main Street. But those conclude my comments. I'll look to my colleagues, see if anyone wants to make a motion on this.
I'll move that we, Planning Commission, adopt. Let me back up here. Approve conditional use permit UP0-512 and parking exception AD0-130. Request to allow an addition of 10% to an existing non-conforming residential structure occupied by a non-conforming duplex use in the R1 single-family residential zoning district and within the Coastal Commission appealed jurisdiction.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Can we have the roll?
You have to change that. No, they're good.
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
No.
And Vice Chairman Luer. Lucas, pardon me.
Aye.
Motion passes 3-1.
All right, we have no other listed new business. We have no unfinished business listed. Planning Commissioner comments. Joe, would you like to say anything? Jesse?
No.
Richard?
I want to thank some of the local residents for bringing in a workshop on the water reclamation facility issues. This group called CAL, Citizens for Affordable Living, had a workshop at the Morro Bay Inn conference room, and I think close to 200 people showed up. It was a really good PowerPoint presentation that was given by a couple of the residents, and I just wanted to thank them and for helping the community get some clarity on what's going on there. Recently, we had another WRF WRFCAC meeting canceled, but there's one that is coming up in the second, and I would highly recommend that people start looking and getting really involved here on that issue. I just want to state one thing with regards to that. Previously, I was a first responder to sewer collection emergencies, and our primary focus here, the commission and city council, is public health and safety. That's why we have rules and everything else. And as a former first responder to sewer collection emergencies, I think that the direction that we're going, we're putting a greater public health risk building a lift station across the street from the existing plant than what we have right now. And I think that, I hope the public gets educated and really get involved in what's the direction that we're going on that project.
Okay, I have no comments tonight. Community Development Director comments.
Just to reiterate what we talked about before, that you, again, have a joint meeting with the Harbor Advisory Board on Thursday at 6 p.m. In the community center in the multipurpose room to discuss working waterfront concepts and Measure D definitions. Other than that, that's about all I have.
Okay, thank you, Scott. So with that, the next regular Planning Commission meeting will be here in the Veterans Memorial Building on April 3rd. 2018 at 6 p.m. So thank you. Closed.
Actually, I